You're listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIBL 101.7 FM. The interview continues. And you recorded a video that appeared on Globo and NCTV and was the reason that the Vancouver Sun article that appeared on Saturday, July the 6th. You made that video on July the 3rd at 7:15 p.m. approximately. Could you explain what that video was all about?
So the video that I recorded at that time was used by Global News and also by CTV. I've made those photos and videos that I took available. The video depicts the fish that were, in my opinion, looked like the ones that were alive seemed to be trying to jump out of the water. And towards the end of the video, it shows the Pacific lamprey as it swims towards me at my feet. It literally is touching me on my shoes. I never even knew they existed in the creek up to that point. It was heartbreaking for me. I wanted to save the fish. I wish I had a pail, but I didn't have a fresh source of water. It was more important to me. I felt that these fish would be lost to get the video. So I took that film at 7:15. I then called the 911 and I reported a toxic event in the creek, and I requested a toxic spill response team immediately to show up to help the environment from what I was witnessing. That never happened. Nobody ever showed up. I also, this is about 45 minutes after I took that video when I made these calls. By that time, my legs were starting to burn from the exposure to the chemical. I also made a call to the province emergency line and reported it there. The in both cases, I don't know the procedures. I don't understand how they would react, but there wasn't a response. So later on that night, around 11:30 p.m., laying in bed, kind of confused and angry that there had no audible response. I heard no fire trucks. I got up in the middle of the night and went and felt the need to photograph this event. So I went from basically Bridge 5 upward towards Laburnum, and the density of the foam, the evidence of the foam was substantial and it wasn't subsiding. I felt something was off. I was trying to figure out how the event started. And the only thing I could come up with was the Polygon had a new development up there. I thought maybe they had a large chemical up there and maybe a truck had hit it. But it wasn't until the next morning when I was at the park that I find out what it was. Because there was no response from anybody, it appeared, I prepared an email and I sent it out to Global News. This is probably 11:30 p.m. at night. Ted Fielding from CTV called me about 7 in the morning on Thursday, and he said he couldn't believe what he saw in the video. And he was dispatching a team of reporters. Well, it was Janet Brown, and Kevin was the cameraman. And they said, we want to meet with you as soon as possible at 10 a.m. In that interval of waiting for them to come in, I received another video and comment from members of my group that had stated that the city workers who were at the park were telling people to stay out of the water because the chemical was caustic. At that time, I was told it was an experimental fire foam that they were using. And that was the first indication that it was the fire department, which I found completely shocking and disarming. So when Global showed up, the narrative had changed from a major incident from Tide detergent to a toxic spill. It just confused me that there was no response. There was no professional firefighters down there. It was a small army of on-call volunteers in firefighters' outfits that were walking around. And I was trying to understand what was going on. I was trying to understand what had happened to me. Why were my legs burning so much? And I had requested the information from the junior, let's just call them the on-calls, who directed me to the supervisor who was sitting on bridge one. And I had asked that individual to please tell me what was I exposed to. That gentleman refused to provide that information to me. And so I asked him, what is the procedure to get that information? He pulled out, like he had a radio on, he had a cell phone, and he just looked at it and he said, well, I can't give that to you. I said, well, I don't understand why you can't tell me what is affecting me. And fortunately, this had gone on throughout the day, but by the time this conversation took place, it was probably dinner time. I'd finished the news interviews. We were still trying to figure out what was going on. No information was coming forward. So the assistant fire chief Houghton had pulled into the parking lot in a white SUV. I'd approached assistant fire chief Houghton and I'd asked him, explained to him the situation that I had gone into the creek to record the event for the use by the fire department. My legs are burning. I need to know what it is so I can proceed with what is best for my health care. And he didn't provide the information. He told me that he wasn't aware of the event, basically. He was out doing other things, he said. He said that only Fire Chief Eric Peterson can give me that information. So I said, well, I'm a victim here. I would really appreciate that information. Can you please call him? And he said, no. So I said, can you please pass along my information to him? And he said, sure. So he took my information, and this is approximately, it's dinner time. It's probably around 6:37, 24 hours after I had been notified of the event. And by 10 p.m., I'd not received a phone call from Eric Peterson, and I was getting concerned. So I went to Firehouse 7 and I videotaped myself in front of Firehouse 7 because nothing was adding up. And when I approached Firehouse 7, I asked for the information, and again, they denied me the information. I felt like I was being stonewalled. I told them if they don't give me the information, I'm going to go to emergency, and they just said, yeah, go right ahead. So I ended up going to emergency and spent half the night there. They weren't aware of what chemicals they were using. They don't have any method to get that information from the fire department. The city stated that they had reported it to the Fraser Health Authority, but I can guarantee you that the emergency department at Vancouver General Hospital did not have that information. After some blood tests were taken and the emergency department consulted poison control, the firefighting foams that they came back with were basically benign. They're more of the environmentally friendly one. It was a statistical analysis, basically, of what's likely to be. In the end, it was wrong because Fire Chief Eric Peterson called me at 10 a.m. on Friday morning, about 36 hours after my exposure, and he said it was PhosCheck 1%. It's a Class B firefighting foam, which is considered extremely toxic, and it was actually being phased out. So the fire department was no longer allowed to use it. So the frustrating part for me was if this is our emergency response team and these are the professionals who will deal with this, I'm completely confused as to their conduct and to their priorities. There was, in my opinion, there was no emergency response launched. The environmental company QM Consulting and GHD. I saw them on Thursday, but I didn't really see the thing start till probably noon on Friday, which I recorded and I posted on the Bateman Dog Park page.
I spoke with the city yesterday about this incident. The head of engineering, Nathan Coyne, and he explained to me that from the city's perspective, 900 swordfish have had lost their lives due to this incident. What does your number say?
I did my own count and I actually sent them on Thursday night. This count that Nathan is referring to is one that was conducted, I believe, by GHD with a team of probably 6 to 8 people in conjunction with the First Nations people from Sumas. My count, initial count, based on that video, I had already sent out to the Wild Salmon Defense Alliance. My count at that time, and this was in that email, which Lynn Perrin also received a copy of, was 1,000 fish based on the length of the creek that I surveyed, based on the length of it. And it's a conservative number because the creek is quite long, and I only calculated to the Bateman Bridge as the distance. When you consider the time of the spill, the first reporting that I'm been made aware of was at 4:35 p.m. It was at a park, Pilfoy Park, which is at the top of the creek, which is just below Laburnum Avenue. The individuals who made that phone call made it to the city engineering after hours call. It was 4:35 p.m. That the video that I saw was probably 100 feet of foam at that time, but the way that the foam was disposed of was in its pure concentrate form. So, 90 to 99% of that remained in the water. At 4:35 p.m., I did some rough calculations of how far away the fire department was from the sewer system was down to Pilfoy Park. It's approximately, the fire department is located on Old Claiborne Road, which is approximately 150 feet above the park. I guesstimate that the incident actually happened around 3 p.m., as early as noon. So, in light of the fact that it was the fire department themselves who created the incident, I'm kind of surprised by Nathan's comments that he said the city first became aware of the incident on that evening. I know for a fact that when I called into 911, they had indicated to me that there had been 4 callers prior to me that they were aware of the event. And 911 was playing down the severity of the response, implying from the engineers that were sent down there, their best guess was that it was the Tide detergent. So they didn't feel it was of concern. So, it just creates more questions for me, like, why didn't the individuals who did this report it? Why are they saying it was 7 p.m. and a lot of time was lost? When I went into the creek that night and did my photo, basically a photo essay to catalog the evidence, for the fire department to use, they weren't down there. And why weren't they there to protect the people they're supposed to serve? Why didn't they have fire trucks going that night and keeping people out of the creek? It's confusing. I have my opinions on it. I'm not prepared to share them at this time, but something's wrong.
Thank you for listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIVL 101.7 FM with your host, Sajid Awal. Join me again next week as I have another great episode for you. This program was sponsored by the Local Journalism Initiative.